Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, very loud. Sorry about that. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. It's brightened up nicely in Dublin, just for your information. And we're all looking forward to the weekend. Early 20s, that's what they're saying. I heard Joanna Donnelly on with Claire Byrne today, and she said the record for October is 25 degrees. And we could, she said, not very likely, but we could. It's a possibility that we could beat that this weekend. So that's good. I'm planning the shorts and the T-shirt, sitting at the back, all that sort of thing. Yeah, today, Bill Bailey's on today. He's always a good guest, very funny man. And he's a musician, of course. And that ties into the fact that I have a drum kit in front of me today. And Graeme Hopkins, who is one of Ireland's best drummers. If you've listened to probably Glenn Hansard over the last 20 years, the likelihood is that Graeme was playing drums on that, and he plays drums for loads of people. Anyway, he's here to put me through my paces and see if it's worth my while continuing with this this drum odyssey that I've set myself off on. So that's after 4 o'clock. And Tony O'Reilly. Tony O'Reilly is the postmaster who went into debt, millions of debt, and then he stole from his workplace, which was on post, and he wrote a book about it. He did time for it. And now he counsels in addiction to gambling. And he gives talks all over the country to various workplaces and to schools about that. And we're going to talk to Tony about the figures released this morning from the ESRI on our gambling habit in this country. So we'll be talking to him about that. This has been going on. It's a good bit of crack in the Irish Times. Frank McNally wrote a piece back at the end of September. Last Friday, in fact, which was the end of September, A History of Ireland in 100 Goodbyes. I love when he does this, and it's just a list of things. To Heller, to Connacht, the flight of the Earls, Goodbye, Máirseann Durkin, that's in there as well.
So goodbye, Máirseann Durkin. I'm sick and tired.
And they're major historical events, and then they're ways of saying goodbye, and the Irish language comes in. Slán go fóill, all those sort of things. And then the final one of his list of 100 was the Irish goodbye, which I understand to be, and I'm very good at it, is when you're out of an evening with a group and drinks have been had and crack has been had. And you say, well, I've had enough drink and I've had enough crack and now it's time to go home. But you know that if you share that thought with anybody, that they'll do their damnedest to convince you to stay. And, you know, the other way it goes. I'm off. It's early. So the Irish goodbye, and this is my understanding of it, I may be wrong, is that you say, I'm going to the loo. You don't even have to say you're going to the loo, and you never return. And that's the way you do it. So there's no discussion, there's no debate, there's no trying to convince somebody to stay when they don't want to. You just head off. Anyway, as a result of that article, the letters page has been full of various ways of saying goodbye. And it continues today. I love this one from Peter Declan O'Halloran in Belturbet in County Cavan. A bilingual friend always used the same farewell. Slán and vanish. Slán and vanish. That's a nice one. I won't be keeping you any longer. That's another one. And somebody else would say, is that the phone? Is that the phone? If you're talking to a neighbour, you see at the front door. And you finished up. Is that the phone? Yeah. My mother's favourite in 50s and 60s family hoolies. This is Michael Rooney from Knocknacarra in Galway. Would you all ever go home so as we can talk about you? That's a good one. Margaret Butler from Booterstown in County Dublin. Is that the time? My favourite one is the RTE News and Current Affairs goodbye. That's the one. They learn it when they go into when you come into the RTE and you go into News and Current Affairs, you learn how to say goodbye, and this is it. Okay, we have to leave it there. That's it. That's the goodbye. We have to leave it there. You'll recognise it now. They all say it. We didn't learn it because we weren't in News and Current Affairs. So there you go. They're having great crack with that, and well done to Frank McNally, who writes the Irishman's Diary in the Irish Times. And I'm sure you have your own way of saying goodbye. Good luck now. See ya. I'm off. All the different ways. Listen, we've been talking about cats and dogs over the last few days. And Emer got onto us yesterday suggesting that maybe we should do an item on grieving after losing a pet. She had lost Beauty and Tilly, both dogs. And on the back of that, Gwen has been on. She said, please, please, please do a section on pet grief. I've yet to experience such a loss. We have two dogs, an 11-year-old Collie Cross and a 9-month-old Jack Russell. Both of them were much wanted pets, but came into our lives under different circumstances. 11 years ago, I was in the thick of it with small children, so our lovely collie girl had to fit in with our busy lives. When I knew I wanted a second dog, I thought long and hard about it for 2 years, because by then I was aware of the commitment, the expense and everything being a dog owner entails. So we have two gorgeous dogs now, two different breeds, two different personalities, two different appetites. Two lovely animals who are intelligent, loving, affectionate and very much part of our family. So I'm interested in hearing about grieving the loss of a pet, because a month ago, our Jack Russell had a run in with a much larger dog and I honestly thought we had lost him. It was horrific. And I think about it every day. Our house wouldn't be the same without our dogs, and I see our older lady getting greyer and slower by the day. It's an inevitable fact, it is. Just like us humans, one day our pet's time will be up. And that's Gwen, gatekeeper of our four boys and watcher over two dogs. That's a lovely email. Thanks for that, Gwen. Well, it's in hand, Gwen and Emer. We've got somebody. We think it's the right person and we hope to have them on next week. So there you go. And just on cats and dogs, did you know cats now have the power to glow in the dark? I didn't know that. Nightclub glowers, or even goers and lowers, will be familiar with seeing clothes glowing under ultraviolet light, an effect known as fluorescence. Ah, yeah. An Australian study shows that this phenomenon is widespread in mammals, including the domestic species of cat. Aside from cats, fluorescence was found in 125 species, including bats, koalas, zebras, moles, polar bears and dolphins. Fluorescent compounds were found in bone, teeth, claws, fur, feathers and skin, researchers said. And they think the fluorescence may have evolved in the animals as a handy biological function, communication or safety, though it could help animals see each other in the dark. That was our big thing. We used to do gymnastics back in Kildare and we weren't great at it now. We were okay, but we used to perform in the local variety concert. And to make it look extra special, we all wore white. They turned off the lights and they put on a fluorescent light. So we had to wear headbands and wristbands. And as you just see these things going across the stage. So it looked very impressive. Now, the gymnastics wasn't up to much, but the spectacle was great. Speaking of spectacles, have you seen the David Beckham Netflix documentary? I haven't watched it myself yet, but there's loads of coverage in the papers today. He's talking openly about being diagnosed with OCD in it. And there's pictures in the papers today of his mansion, their mansion, I suppose, himself and Victoria. They have a mansion worth 12 million. It's in Oxfordshire. So it has its own lake. It has its own safari tent worth 50,000. And I see an amazing looking pizza oven there. I'd like that in our place, if you don't mind. And then we're privy to his walk-in wardrobe. And as would reflect a person with OCD, everything is laid out perfectly. Perfectly. All colour-coded. Shirts, scarves, socks, jackets. All laid out. Marie Kondo would give him an A+. A higher merit for this. But I'm just counting the jackets there. So what I can see there, and I think they're all jackets, they could be suits, 30 at my count. And they also have a residency in New York, so there's probably another 30 there. But anyway, he's a multi-zillionaire. But there's an honesty about it, and both of them are interviewed for it. And there's a scene where Victoria is talking about their respective families and how they were brought up. I think she's confusing working hard with working class. Is that it? Yeah, so there is a difference between working hard and working class, Victoria.
Yeah, I mean, I think also we both come from families that work really hard. Both of our parents work really hard. Mm. We're very working class.
Be honest.
I am being honest. I am being
honest.
What
car did your dad drive you to school in?
So my dad...
No,
did,
one answer.
My dad...
What car was it?
All right, it's not a simple answer
What did you... get your dad to drive
it depends.
No.
Okay, in the 80s, my dad had a Rolls Royce.
Ah, very working class, very working class. Everybody in Camping Crescent had a Rolls Royce, Victoria. Yeah, working hard and working class. Anyway, and David Beckham joined Gary Neville and Roy Keane, his old mates, on a podcast yesterday. And what was surprising to us was the moniker he gave to Roy Keane.
You know, not talking about Keane too much, you know, because I don't want to embarrass him. But, you know, when you've got someone like Keane in the team that sets the high standards, not just at the weekend, But every single day, there was a standard set. And I always thought that I was, you know, professional, dedicated, but nothing compared to what Keeney was like. Every single day in training, he wanted to win.
It sort of softens him, doesn't it? Because we have this image of Roy Keane and Saipan, you know, and that's, you know, what he is. He demands perfection from all around him. He's a stern enough figure who strikes fear into his opponents and presenters and interviewers. But when you call him Keeney, it sort of, it pulls the rug from underneath that stern character. Keeney. Oh, Keeney. Keeney, yeah. James Crombie. He's the photographer, and I see he's released another beautiful photograph of a murmuration of starlings. It was captured earlier on this year on Loch Ennell. And you can have a look at it there, jamescrombie.ie. We've spoken to him a good few times, and most recently when we were in Mullingar for our 5K run. But that's amazing, that one. He just has a knack. He has a knack and the patience. A knack and the patience. This is of interest, and it's sort of, I suppose, related to what we're doing at the end of the show today, as in the drums and me learning to play the drums. County Wicklow residents aged 55 and over are invited to pick up instruments they used to play and start playing again with the help of Making Music with the Rosanna Trio, the Wicklow Teaching Residency. It's a partnership between Wicklow County Council and the Arts Office there and Music Network. And the project is focused on helping participants return to playing an instrument and sharing the joy of group music making. It provides participants with free tuition from professional musicians, access to instruments for the duration of the programme, and opportunities to connect and learn with other budding musicians along the way. So that's nice. And of course, when you read about getting old and the things you can do to, you know, to make sure that mind and body stays healthier longer, music and learning music comes up over and over again. And that's part of the reason that I'm venturing into the world of drums. The world of drums. It's a drum destiny. So that's coming up. I was sure I'd have some original ways of saying an Irish goodbye, but I can't think of anything that hasn't been already mentioned. So I'll just have to sign off. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's mentioned in the Times as well. That ridiculous habit we all have of saying goodbye 100 times before we hang up the phone. Anyway, for the moment, good luck. See you. Bye, 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 bye.
I do my head toss. Check.
Lizzo, good as hell on RTÉ Radio 1. 51551, ray at rte.ie. I'm going to strain the spuds. Seemingly that's an Australian euphemism for going to loo, but that's a way of saying goodbye. I'll see you when I'm looking at you. That's from Darren in Wexford. I'm looking at some of the other ones from the Irish Times today. I better go to bed and let you go home. That's Bill Murphy in Clarina. Is it Clarina or Clarina in County Limerick? Don't leave it so long the next time. That's from Mary Walsh in Stirogan. It's all about sort of, you know that you want to do something else and you've had your time with this person and you want to let them down softly and you want to say go away, but you want to say it in a nice way. So that's what it's all about really, isn't it? Now, we're looking for two people to come on at 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two quizzers, three clues, more than three clues, could be, and three questions and all that sort of thing. And there's a prize. Ariel House is part of Ireland's largest regional hotel group, the I Knew It Collection, and it's located in Balls Bridge in Dublin. And we've got a two-night stay in this peaceful neighbourhood with an award-winning breakfast each morning. You can enjoy the understated elegance of this Victorian guesthouse, where some guest rooms and the entire ground floor have recently been updated. Using a colour palette sympathetic with the style of the three charming Victorian townhouses that together make up Ariel House. And a stay in Ariel House is like taking a step back in time to the grandeur of old Victorian Dublin, but with all the polish, comfort and conveniences of the most modern of eras. Arielhouse.ie, arielhouse.ie. Here's your question on this Thursday afternoon. Which reality TV show is back on our screens this weekend? Is it Big Brother or Little Brother? Which reality TV show is back on our screens this weekend? Big Brother or Little Brother? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. Here you go. And we're going to be talking to Bill Bailey after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 51551 ray@rte.ie. It's always a pleasure to speak to our next guest. He joins me today as he prepares to head on the road, first to Australia, New Zealand, and then back Ireland and the UK. Bill Bailey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So you're heading to Australia first, is that it?
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm going down to the Antipodes, also some dates in the Far East, a few places. Places I've been before, places like Kuala Lumpur and Shanghai and Jakarta and those kind of places. So, yeah, far-flung places, yeah.
Is it mainly expats who come to see you or everybody?
Well, do you know what? It's funny because I expected that to be the case. But the last time I was there, it was mainly locals. And I think that there's been a huge kind of appetite for comedy from Britain and the UK and Ireland over the years because it started out with YouTube. I think that a lot of comics, that's where people first see them now. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is, you know, that was like, I don't know when YouTube started, like mid-2000s or something. And then now what you get is a lot of people who watch those comics now will want to go and see it live. So I think there's a huge appetite for it. And it's like a live experience. And, you know, that's something you can't really replicate. So,
That's interesting. Because I was looking at some, they say, clips from Would I Lie to You? You know, 4, 5, 10 million views on YouTube. So that's where people are getting their comedy initially. And then they want to see it live, as you say.
Yeah.
Thought of Fire.
That's it.
Is that a makey up word, the name of the show?
Yeah, it is. it's a kind of a hybrid word, if you will. The thought and amplifier conflated together.
Right, okay.
So that's the thing, you know. So that's kind of what my shows are like. Stories and recollections and jokes and all kinds of spoken word and lots of music. So I kind of thought, I'm always trying to think of a word that describes me that's just not, you know, the usual words. And that one, I don't know, it popped into my head. I thought, yeah, this will do. Thought of Fire. I kind of like the sound of it.
Okay.
Like the way it rolls off the tongue.
So when you get on stage, will you be thoughtifying? Is that it?
I will be. That's me.
Right.
I am the thoughtifier.
Right. Oh, I loved Bill Bailey last night. He thoughtified very well. That'll be the past tense.
Yeah. It sounds like something like some old-timey vaudeville show. Yes. I went to see the Thoughtifier. He came to town.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Here he comes. Look at this man. Is it real? Can he be doing what he is? Yes. He can titivate your minds with his extraordinary thoughts and amazing instruments. Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
They'll be talking in pubs and clubs and cafes about the Thoughtifier coming to town. But so AI, you cover artificial intelligence, and we've been speaking an awful lot about it on the program, and it is fascinating and scary. And like even this week, you see there's a story there about a Swiss man who was paralyzed, and they've put a piece of technology on his brain, and if he thinks about moving his hand moves.
Yes.
Like it's spectacular.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. And that's the thing, you see, that we are just sort of, I don't think we even have any idea how this is going to change our lives in so many ways. And it's not all negative. I think that's only.
That's a positive one.
I mean, there's a lot of positives, and I think medically is where we'll see a huge amount of the applications that will be positive.
Yes.
And in terms of like finding, I mean, I read another story about, you know, the fact that the data that required to create new antibiotics, you know, it takes human research years, you know, and you get to feed it into AI and it just spits it out in a couple of hours. Yeah, there you go. You know, it's like, next, you know. So there's there are positives to it. But those things, obviously, as you mentioned, they're amazing and they will improve our lives, no doubt. And I think where I'm looking at it is the sort of, there's this sort of existential panic around the arts about, you know, the idea that somehow films will be AI renditions of actors and the script will be written by ChatGPT. There'll be no need for actors, writers. The whole thing will be done, you know, on a computer in the afternoon, but while it's solving, you know, while it's curing disease. So that's where I'm sort of interested in. I think that what I wanted to explore was the fact that human, one of the great things that we have, that we're almost like our secret weapon, is our consciousness, is thought, is the random sort of oddness, the eccentricity, the flawed nature of humanity. That's what sort of connects with people in terms of live. You know, that's really what, that's what makes it. That's what makes music work. That's what makes arts work. You know, the poetry, theatre, whatever you want. And so it's sort of really exploring that. And I did actually do an experiment. I mean, there actually has been some comedy experiments with
AI, yes, yeah.
With sort of, you know, mixed results. I mean, like, but the other night I tried it out. I tried a live ChatGPT roast in my show, and it's amazing. If you like, it's already getting to be quite sophisticated. Yeah. Like, I was in Tewkesbury, which is this sort of, you know, very nice kind of market town in England. And then you say, tell me about Tewkesbury, and it says Tewkesbury is a blah blah blah, and it just burbles on, spits out all the information from whatever, you know, Wikipedia. Mm. But then you can say, tell me about Tewkesbury in a sarcastic way, right? And then it just goes, oh, Tewkesbury, so great, it's really great. I mean, who wouldn't love it, you know? And immediately you think, well, this is actually, this is great. I didn't expect that. Yeah. So yeah, it's we can use it to our advantage. I think that's the thing. It's a tool that we can, if we get on top of it, we know how to manipulate it. Because you know, then it's going to be a positive.
Yeah, I don't share your optimism, but like even this week, Tom Hanks has come out and said that dental ad with me on it, that's not me. You know, anyway. Yeah. But I say to everybody I meet, keep it live and messy, because AI can't do live and messy. Although
it can't. No. That's exactly it. Yeah, it can't. It can't replicate the nonsense that we come up with.
Exactly. It'll do its best, the damnedest, but it won't succeed. It won't succeed. Yeah. I saw you on with Kathy Burke. She did a lovely documentary on growing old. And you're a friend of hers, and she obviously called in a favour or whatever, because you're not getting old at all. You're still in your 50s, you know, so that's quite young. But it forced you obviously to think about the ageing process. And was that a tough thing to face up to, or is it something that's on your mind all the time?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I mean, I think I'm aware of it, obviously, you know, like just the general humiliations, the little humiliations, you know, like, oh, I get a weird pain in my knee, and like, I've got this weird lump on my foot. It's like, what's that? Why? What's going on? Is it just wear and tear? Is it just like, you know, is this what happens? But I tend not to think about it. I mean, I tend to think about, you know, the sort of positives, again, of anything, which is hopefully there are some positives in this, that you have maybe a bit of insight, a glimmer of knowledge, of self-knowledge, maybe. I don't know. And I think also the resilience. I think your sort of stamina, your resilience goes up a bit, I think. You know, the mental strength improves, I think, over the years. It's almost like, you think, well, okay, physically I might not be up to it, but mentally I might be. So I think that's something to be, to certainly, I take a positive on it, you know. Yeah. It's basically like the body is willing, but the mind is strong.
Yeah, you become more comfortable in your own skin, which is hugely important. Are you watching Strictly? I was going to say Dancing with the Stars. That's what we call it here, Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, Dancing with the Stars, of course. But it makes more sense. It makes far more sense as a title. It doesn't make any sense, Strictly. It's like a weird kind of cut and paste title, isn't it? Strictly Ballroom and Come Dancing. You know, Strictly Come doesn't make any sense. As I said repeatedly on that show, but of course it all got edited out. but yeah, I have. And I thought, yeah, it's quite a strong showing this year. You know, with Angela Rippon, goodness sake. I mean, you know.
Yes, the vertical splits.
God, I know. There you go. That's an inspiration to us all.
Yes.
And that's what I'll be working on for this show.
And do you sit sort of like in your ivory tower type sofa and go, oh yeah, I could do that. Yeah, they don't know, they're making a mistake there. They're peaking too soon. Yeah. They're peaking too soon.
Exactly. I'm all over that. Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking at them going, no, the hand position's all wrong. Look at that arm. The shoulders are too high.
Straighten your back.
That's points off for that. The problem is, you can't help it. Because, like, you know, when you're going through something like that, you've been judged, and, like, you know, every sort of the minutiae of every movement is sort of looked at, then, yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't help but do it.
No. Well, I suppose you're more entitled to have an opinion than most of us, and we all do have one. Listen, you mentioned your show is obviously loads of music in it. You're a multi-instrumentalist. You don't mind me asking some advice. I'm a man in my late 50s. I've decided I'm going to learn the drums. Right?
Oh.
Yeah. I was looking for a song, you know, that I could aim towards. So a big birthday next year, there might be a party and I could. This is ridiculous. It was a ridiculous idea, but there you go. It's something to aim towards.
Good on you. No, yeah. I say aim at something. That's a good thing. Yeah, very much so. I mean, the only thing is, if you've got somewhere, you know, you can practice.
And I have the silent ones.
You've got the silent drums. Well, there you go.
With the headphones, that's fine.
With the headphones. So you're not going to just do the night.
No, I'm not going to ruin my marriage. You're not going to ruin my marriage.
I thought you were going to set it up in your front room and, like, you know, do you want your tea? What? Bam, 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 bam. I mean, that's not a bad one, actually. Phil Collins.
Oh, yeah. You know, in the air tonight. Yeah.
Yes. Now, there you go, you see. If you can get the drum fill, that's impressive.
Yes. Right? And what about Nirvana? I was thinking Smells Like Teen Spirit. Would that be very difficult to do?
That's quite a good one, yeah. I mean, that is, if you listen to Dave Grohl talking about it, though, a lot of those early Nirvana drum fills were all robbed off the old 70s funk and disco fills.
Ah, right.
So I would say practice your disco. Practice your fourth and floor.
There you go. My 11-year-old son has discovered The Who, and he's playing My Generation on loop, and he's going, will you be able to play drums like him, Daddy? And I go, no, that's Keith Moon. I won't be doing
that's
that.
Keith Moon. that's a legend. But not a bad one to practice your sort of, you know, your stop and start.
Is that difficult, to stop and start? Is it a bit like...
Well, you've got to be able to kind of don't let the drums control you. You've got to be in charge of them drums.
Right.
And if you start lashing away at those cymbals, they're all going to just be slashing away. You've got to be able to hit the cymbals and grab it and silent and mute it with your hands.
Yeah.
Or it'll be all over you.
Yeah.
You know, you'll need arms like Shiva. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. And did you teach yourself, or did you go to somebody to learn how to play?
I taught myself. I had the silent drums as well. Yeah. So I played along to lots of songs that I liked, lots of Chili Peppers, Nirvana, some metal, but lots of disco, lots of dance tracks. Always good for keeping time.
Good advice. Good advice.
Good luck.
Thanks. You can send the invoice to RTE.
Yeah, of course.
Television, you've done so many different television things, and it appears to come so easy to you.
I think the thing is that there's a lot of things that I'm interested in, and a lot of those interests is reflected in the live shows, you know. I mean, and so the kind of shows that I tend to get involved in are things that are interested me in our minds anyway. So, you know, I kind of feel quite natural doing them. You know, if it's something to do with art or portraiture, painting, I love doing that. I love sketching. If it's to do with nature, you know, if it's to do with the outdoors, you know, all of those things, these are the things that occupy me when I'm not working, not doing comedy, you know, and I'm not on stage. So that's an easy sort of choice for me. Look, put it this way. When you dance the Paso Doble in front of millions of people, right, there's nothing that really holds any great kind of, you know...
Fear,
sort
of, yes.
Any fear anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You put yourself out there.
It burns away all the fear. Exactly. It's like when they come in and they say, oh, well, it's a semi-final. We've got about 14 million people. Oh, right. Okay. All right. And you'll be dancing what? The tango to Metallica's Enter Sandman. Okay. Fine. That's fine. Absolutely normal. So something like that happens. You tend to just, you know, anything's a breeze.
Were you ever floating above yourself, looking at yourself on the dance floor? Was it an out of body ever?
Every time.
Right.
Oh, okay. Every time. Yeah. I had an out of body experience. Yeah. I was like, what the hell is happening now? In fact, on that Metallica one, I actually got so excited, I danced off the dance floor. I actually danced into a camera, and it was one of my worst fears that I would actually. That was what would happen. I would actually lose. I'd forget where I was and dance off out of the studio, you know, like through a door, you know, like just
down the road.
Yeah. Where's he gone? That'll do it for you.
Thought of Fire. Thought of Fire is the new show from Bill Bailey, and he's in the Three Arena in Dublin on the 9th of February 2024, and he's up in the SSE Arena in Belfast on the 10th of February 2024, and tickets are available now at Ticketmaster. Bill, enjoy Down Under and everywhere else, and we'll see you in Dublin then in February of next year. Lovely talk to you.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
And I practice the drums.
Yes. I'm going there now. Bye.
Good luck. See ya.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, lots of reaction today to the new figures from the ESRI revealing that Ireland's problem with gambling is 10 times higher than previously measured. As opposed to 0.03% of the population, they now reckon it's 3.3%. Although this may shock many, it won't shock my next guest, who has been talking about this for many years. His name is Tony O'Reilly, and he first shared his own story with me back in 2018. He's now an experienced addiction counsellor who specialises in gambling addiction, and he's on the line from Donegal. Hello, Tony.
Hey, how's things? Thanks for having me on.
Good to talk to you. I suppose people know your story and they have to be reminded of it just because it's like your CV. It lets people know that you're qualified to talk about this. So you are the postmaster who robbed on post to feed your gambling habit. You did time and you wrote the book. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can remember like yesterday, the first chat we had about it. It was so difficult to share it for the first time. And I suppose a lot of the work I've done since is to try create awareness and education around gambling, because I always felt there was a lack of that in Ireland. So today's report is really welcome news, so that it might help create and start a lot more conversations.
Yeah.
And even talking to some of the school teachers today in the schools that I'm visiting today, that seems to be the case. So it's really, really positive.
So you're up there giving talks. Is that it? Is that what you do?
Yeah, I'm up in Donegal since Sunday. I'm doing a project with the National Family Resource Centre, National Forum, and some of the local FRCs. We're doing school talks in the local schools to help promote awareness around gambling. So today now I had two talks, so I'm nearly talked out. But we had over 250 students at the talks and a number of teachers. So they got a really good insight into, again, part of the story, how the bet started with a £1 bet and ended up where it ended up.
Yeah.
But also a little bit of psychoeducation on gambling, and also the kind of the overlap between gambling and gaming, which we're seeing a lot of nowadays, especially in the work that they do.
Now the results of this ESRI research is hugely important, because up until now, people had said, look, most people enjoy gambling. It's a very, very small percentage, actually less than 1% of the population that are problem gamblers. But now we know that that's not the case.
Yeah, it was a really important report, because I remember when the previous report came out in 2019, myself and my colleague Barry Grant from Extern Problem Gambling, I remember we met and we were just devastated, because we knew it was being underreported. And then people will run with these figures saying we don't need as many help and support for people, or we don't need as much education awareness because it's not as bad as what we were always saying it was. So the figures there really back it up. And I think that's a lot to do with the way that they carried out the research, the fact that it was anonymous, the fact that they got a really good cohort of people, sample research kind of people to do it. It's really, really positive to hear it.
Yeah. The other thing that's hugely important, and I want to get your opinion on this, is the amount of revenue that the small percentage of problem gamblers create for the gambling companies.
Yeah, definitely. We would have seen that, because I think I saw a stat on a Panorama program a couple of years ago, and it said that 78% came from 5% of the gamblers, which would be, you know, it would be a fairly large amount. But I think it's something like, what is it?
It's 28%.
Just over a quarter of it. Yeah, by people gambling with people with problems, and that would be very significant amount of the money that they take in is coming from a small percentage of people, which would back up what we were saying, that the majority of money comes from the people who are experiencing the most harm with it.
Yeah. So just to do the maths on that, so it's 28% of revenue. They reckon that the revenue in Ireland from gambling is between 6 and 8 billion. So
yeah, and that even went up during the pandemic.
Yes,
So it did. No, I'd say we could nearly add to that figure now.
So say it's 8 billion, and it's over a quarter. So that's over 2 billion of the revenue generated by gambling in this country is because people have a problem with gambling. That's hugely important, isn't it?
It is. And like even the other stats, the fact that it was the average was just over 1,000 a month per person who had a problem with gambling. Like in the kind of the world that we're living in today, we're all struggling with the cost of living, like over €1,000. Basically, it's like €1,000 spent on something that's supposed to be entertainment or recreation. It just it boggles belief, really.
And for a lot of people who are in the higher tax bracket, they have to earn €2,000 to spend that €1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just going back to your own experience, which is hugely important, and it sort of colours everything you think about this, you know. So at one stage, were you Paddy Power's best customer?
Yeah, there's a book written by Aaron Rogan, a great book called Punters, where he talks about the rise of Paddy Power, and there's a chapter on my story within it, and he kind of would have done a lot of interviews, and that was one of the things that came out in the book, that on some of the quieter days, I was doing as much gambling as the rest of Paddy Power put together.
What?
That's what came out in the book, yeah. It's unbelievable that the fact that one person could be doing that kind of gambling. Now, again, like my story is probably 12 years ago. I suppose the face of gambling has probably changed in the meantime. So I think internet gambling was really only starting to lift off during the kind of back end of my story. So it was huge amounts of money. Like at one stage, I think like there was a turnover of $10.5 million on the account, and I would have been gambling at the end of it. I would have been gambling hundreds of thousands of euro a day. Not gambling that, but the turnover, like winning and then subsequently trying to win back the losses. There would have been huge turnover in the account. I think that's where they kind of got the figures from.
I heard the junior minister on this morning, James Brown, in the Department of Justice, and we're still waiting for that gambling bill. They're saying by the end of the year, we'll wait and see. But he had a great little line there. He was going back in 2012. There was argument and discussion about the planning permission for a casino in Tipperary. And now most 12-year-olds have a casino in their back pocket, as in on their phone.
Yeah, and the regulation is hugely important for that as well, because we need regulation to protect our young people.
We'll talk about the regulation in a moment, but will you just try and explain to our listeners who don't have a problem with gambling how it happens and what it does to you and what sort of fix or buzz you get from it?
Basically, for me, it hijacked the brain. So, like, for someone who never felt he was good enough or good at anything, when that first bet went in, that wasn't a huge amount of money. I won £45 at the time when Burkham scored the goal in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. And it was the feeling I got from it. So I became addicted to that feeling, as much as, you know, it was great to win the money, obviously. And then when people were saying to me, you must be really good at this, I wanted more of that. So I was chasing that. So it can become a problem very, very quickly. And then when you start gambling with money that you can't afford to lose, and you chase wins and chase losses, there can be a fine line between, you know, do it recreationally. And then if you're doing it in any way to try to help you financially or help you with your mental health, it can become a problem very, very quickly. And then when I opened up my online account and was able to gamble on credit from the comfort of my own bedroom on my PC, the bet started to rise slowly. And that created its own problem, because I was getting loans without anyone realizing I was doing it. The debt amassed, and then I was kept on chasing the money, trying to get back to zero. And as you said, nowadays, the ease of access to kind of transfer money on Revolut, or, you know, we have a casino in our pocket 24 hours a day. You know, the regulation should tighten up the ability for young people not to be able to open up accounts. So, you know, it's a perfect storm, because the phones themselves are highly addictive. I think we're nearly all guilty at times of spending too much time on our phones. And if you overlap gambling on top of that, like it's we're being bombarded with ads, we're being bombarded with messages to gamble. Like, even if you look at sport nowadays, the talk about the expected goals in the Premier League game, like, who needs to know what expected goals is going to be unless you're doing scorecasts or handicap betting on it? So there's lots of elements which makes it very difficult not to be impacted by gambling advertising or gambling prompts, and people can get sucked into it. And like, I'm not anti-gambling in any shape or form. The majority of people who do it will do it recreationally. What I am seeing in our own work, that there's a big increase in the amount of people getting in trouble with it.
You see, you're buying into the narrative there with that, because looking at the figures here, so it's 3.3% have a problem, and then but there's a large percentage who have moderate problems with gambling. And when you add the problem gamblers and the moderate problem gamblers, that generates 50% of the revenue of the gambling industry. And
yeah,
that's
huge amounts.
But that spin that most people do it for a bit of entertainment, it's just a bit of crack, you know, only a small percentage have a problem. A spin that obviously is, you know, perpetuated by the industry, because they know that if the problem gamblers and the moderately problem gamblers stop gambling, they're losing half of their revenue.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It just shows how much money is being gambled by the people who get into trouble or the people who are on the cusp of getting into trouble. And the one thing that wasn't mentioned in the report either is the amount of underage people who are gambling. That wasn't even included in the report. So you could add another bit of more numbers on top of those numbers as well. Because when I do the school talks, there are underage people aged 15, 16 gambling regularly.
How do they do it, Tony?
I've done the school talk there a few years ago, and half the teachers weren't in the room. There's 20 lads in the talk. It was a small talk, and half of them had online accounts. And I said, how do you have online accounts at 15, 16? And I said, sure, I won't mention the bookies. He said, sure, this particular bookie thinks I'm 28 because I can manipulate the data on my phone. And nice. Then I have heard other cases where they will actually, pay someone to do the betting for them. So there's people who will actually set up accounts, they'll get sent to Revolut the money, they'll do the bet for the person, and they'll send back the money in Revolut and take a percentage of it. So there's people actually making money off getting bets on for underage people. Right. So that's what I'm hearing in the classrooms as well.
How do you feel about, and I heard, I can't remember if it was Mary Wilson or Audrey Carville or Rachel, one of the presenters on Morning Ireland this morning saying to somebody, or maybe it was Claire Byrne, that there are a lot of people employed in the gambling industry. And that if you place more restrictions on it, people are going to lose their jobs. How do you react to that?
I wouldn't necessarily, like, I can understand where they're coming from, but I wouldn't necessarily agree. I think, like, I look at the bookie offices in a very similar way to how travel agents were back in the day. Like, there was travel agents in every town and city. And over time, as the internet took over and people were able to book their holidays online, it became very easy. They started to disappear. And now gambling is so easy to do online. And we've gone nearly to a cashless society where we're all kind of tapping. So a lot of the gambling is done being online. So I think they're probably a victim of their own success in that people are gambling more online, because the stat would say 60% of it's done online, of the gambling is done online. So I think that's what can happen. Okay. And like, there was a certain bookies, I was working with a client before, and he said his friend worked in this bookies. And during the pandemic, the staff were actually being encouraged to get people to open up online accounts. So they were getting a bonus for every couple of people open up an online account within that particular bookie. So they're actually doing themselves our jobs by getting people to open up
ultimately,
online accounts.
Yeah,
people won't come into the office.
Now,
so like I did think it's interesting that, you know, it was put out there today that there's a lot of shop closures with Paddy Power. So it is interesting that the news was released the same day as the report.
Interesting, yeah. So the gambling regulation bill, it's been stop starting now for the last 10 years, hasn't it? And one of the big things is this, the introduction of a gambling regulator, and the CEO of that is in place already. But the bill hasn't been passed. What's your understanding of when it will be passed?
We've met with the regulator a couple of times, and we're hopeful that it's going to be passed early next year. But we've been waiting for this for 10 years. And my colleague Barry would always say, you know, the previous record was held by the alcohol bill, which was hugely lobbied against, which took 3.5 years. We've been waiting 10 years.
Right.
And how many families have been devastated? Like, my story was, you know, a big story back at the time, but how many families have been devastated by this in the meantime? And I think the figures today really kind of bear that out as well. So it's hopefully it's not another false dawn that to get it over the line. It's a complex piece of work, but hopefully to get it over the line, because I do think it'll make a huge difference. And given that I've met the regulator and some of our staff, they seem really determined to get this right and get it over the line, which is hugely positive for people who might be impacted by gambling, or people who might be potentially impacted by gambling as well.
So everybody knows that advertising of gambling, you know, it works, as in it makes people gamble.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly horrified, and I've been saying it for years. you know, you're watching something of a Sunday evening or you're watching an All-Ireland football final, and when it comes to the break, there's an ad for gambling. And I think that's horrific. And I suppose that's a problem. You know, we're having our own problems in here, and people are talking about the dual funding model. And like, definitely advertising gambling services is not a public service. And it's something we shouldn't be doing. And when the bill is introduced, then that'll be banned. There'll be no advertising between 5:30 in the morning and 9:00 in the evening on television. That'll be part of it.
I think it's very important to ban it during the day, especially when children are being exposed to. But then there's so much advertising online as well, so I don't know how they're going to
control that. And the internet doesn't have a border. The internet doesn't have a border.
No, and that's the problem, because you look at a football matches, there's double hoardings now, and you're being bombarded with gambling messages the whole time. So it's going to be very difficult, but at least it's something. It's something, a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And part of it is to advertising aimed at children and problem gamblers will be banned. So how do you define an ad that's aimed at problem gamblers? Surely that's all gambling advertising.
I haven't heard that before. Aimed at problem gamblers. There are triggers. Like, some people, when you work with people who've developed the problem with gambling, there are internal and external triggers. And some people, mainly younger people, will be impacted by seeing odds on the telly. So, like, when I'm kind of looking at a football match the weekend, and you might see, you know, Ray Winston coming on and saying a certain player is a certain price to score a goal. That might just sow the seed in the back of my head of, if the person does score, if I think someone else scores, it just sows the seed and maybe gets you thinking about, maybe that's what they're talking about. I haven't heard that they're specifically targeting people with problem gambling, but all advertisement can be triggering.
And is it still a struggle for you, Tony?
Generally, my main struggles will be internal triggers, like when I feel overwhelmed and feel probably not my best self. I can go back into old behaviours, like, you know, like not gambling, but definitely shopping is something I have to look at, because I look for that quick fix or quick buzz or quick. So looking at kind of sports, generally not. But in saying that, like, I was meeting a friend of mine for coffee in Tramorder a few weeks ago, and I was walking past the bookies, and it popped into my head. I think it was West Ham were playing Luton Town that night, and I kind of went, "You don't wonder what score it'll be," because I just saw the other things on the posters in the window. And I just said to myself, I think it'll go and be that score. And I said, I think it's going to be 2-1. And then I didn't watch the match, but when I saw the results the following day, I saw Luton got a late goal to make it 2-1.
Right.
And I was thinking, geez, maybe I could do this thing.
No, step away from the bookies.
I think because I'm working in the area and I see other people being devastated by this, I think it's a daily reminder that I can never go back and do it. So while I might get triggered by it, I can always catch myself, play the tape forward. I'll never get back to the money I gamble, but I will get back to where I was headwise if I go back gambling. So I never want that again.
Interesting in the report, and you know, it's over 100 pages. So I read what I think is the important parts, but it says, this is a direct quote: gambling is viewed negatively by the public. A majority of the public believe that it should be discouraged, and large majorities believe that there are now too many opportunities to gamble, and that gambling is dangerous for family life. I think we're after
being bombarded so much, but I think people are sick of seeing ads. For people are sick of being rammed down their throat. Yeah. I think it is something I said that is enjoyed by some people, but I think we're constantly nearly being sold at with gambling. Like, you can't go online on your social meetings, but you'll be getting ads to gamble, and you'll be given opportunities to gamble or enhanced odds to gamble. So I think people are sick of seeing the ads on the telly as well, I think.
The other, the soft gambling, it'll be interesting to see how this regulatory body react to the lottery. Because the lottery's revenue in 2021 was over $1 billion. And they reckon that 17% of that came from problem gamblers. That's €170,000 of the lottery's revenue came from problem gamblers. And you just wonder, you know, and then they're advertising the fact that they're giving money to children's charities. I just, that connection, which is a direct connection, bothers me. It'll be interesting to see how the regulatory body sort that out when they get into power.
It'll be interesting to see the stats on that.
Yeah. Tony, listen, thanks for taking the call. You're up there in Donegal, and I'm sure we'll talk again when the bill is finally introduced in 2027 or 2028. No, I'm joking. I shouldn't joke about these things.
I suppose thanks again, Ray, for shining a light on it. I know you've been talking about this for a long time, so thanks a million for continuing to shine a light on it.
Thanks, Tony. Mind yourselves. F on. Bye. Thank bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That's 170 million, not 170,000. I was thinking 170,000 was a low enough figure. So 170 million of lottery revenue is due to problem gamblers, according to that ESRI report today. Gurramagh Gacart, thank you very much. 5155 on RAE at RTE.ie. Ray, if everyone drank and gambled responsibly, pubs and bookies all across Ireland will be out of business, is that person. If I had my way, I would ban online gambling. It is plain immoral, taking advantage of vulnerable people. The gambling ads are so sophisticated, sucking people in. That's Dan in Cork. And an anonymous text, Ray, I lost everything through gambling, says that person. Ray, I'm messaging you as regards the Victoria Beckham interview. I agree with her, as I myself come from a hard-working family. I look at it this way, no matter what you work at, where you grow up, what your parents do for a living, we are all working for a living and doing the best we can for our families, etc. So I think it's about time that the powers that be abolish this phrase, working class. I've never heard the words being used so much in the last year or so. I personally think it's an insult to be labelling people in this day and age as to what background or job you work at. It's about time this was abolished. I thought the days of class distinctions were truly gone. Interestingly, I had that very same chat a few weeks ago. With a man who knows a lot more than I do and works in the field, and he said that the phrase working class is outmoded and it should be thrown in the bin. And I argued, but I came around to his way of thinking at the end. So he's right, you're right, I'll take note of that. On saying goodbye, follow me, I'm right behind you, Tony Kilkenny. And a caller thinks that bye-bye came in with mobile phones. She doesn't remember people doing it on landlines. Interesting. And then Brian in Leash was on. He says, I worked with a Polish fella a few years ago. He asked me, Brian, what's this look? I had no clue what he meant. And then I figured it out. It's good luck. So the poor man who was learning English couldn't figure out what they were saying. Good luck. Yeah. GLUK. Yeah. Now, we've two quizzers standing by and there will be a prize awarded, there will, for the winner. And it's a two-night stay for two in Ariel House, which is one of the Ainua Collection hotels and is located in Balls Bridge. And they've recently done up some guest rooms and the entire ground floor. And a stay in Ariel House is like taking a step back in time to the grandeur of old Victorian Dublin, but with all the polished comfort and conveniences of the most modern of eras. And they have an award-winning breakfast. There you go, an award-winning breakfast. Arielhouse.ie, arielhouse.ie. Jean Murray is in Athlone, the middle of the country. Hello, Jean.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
How are things today?
Good. Thanks.
You're all busy.
Yes. Very nervous now.
About the quiz or been bridesmaid?
About the quiz.
All right, sorry. No, I thought, because Saturday is a big day. What's happening?
A cousin of mine is getting married in the Shamrock Lodge in Athlone here, and yeah, we're all looking forward to it.
And you're a bridesmaid?
Yeah, great. I am.
How many bridesmaids are there?
Four.
Who picked out the dresses?
The bride.
Are they the same?
They are.
All right. Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. All the same color.
All the same color. Yeah.
Right. Right. And you were fine with it. Of course, you're not going to say anything else. But I hear it from
yes,
you.
Yes. No.
No. You offer that
no,
up.
No. They're absolutely lovely.
They're actually lovely. Right? Yeah. Sound slightly surprised there. They're actually lovely. Yeah.
They're absolutely lovely.
Absolutely lovely. Okay.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Right. And what are your duties as bridesmaid, or do you have any?
No, I think just enjoy the day and have fun, I think, is just
that's
the
easy.
Memo for
that's
the day, yeah.
That's the memo, yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah.
And who are you going with?
Well, my husband and the kids are coming as well.
Oh, are they? Great.
So, yeah.
So I'm just looking at the ages of your children. You will have your hands full.
Yeah, I know. I might give one of them to the grandparents, maybe.
Right, so Anna is 4, Daniel 6 and Isla is 2.
Yeah, that's right.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So busy. Right. And what's on the... Because I'm sure you have a schedule of things you have to do now in the run-up to it.
Just all the usual, you know, the girls.
Yeah.
The tan and right. The makeup and the hair and all
yes.
that. Yeah.
So when...
The enjoyable bit.
When's the tan? When has that been done?
Later, today, I
oh,
think.
Today? Right.
Yeah, it's evening,
yeah. Okay, yeah. And then the morning of it will be the hair and makeup thing.
Oh, yeah, all yeah. that.
Great. Yeah. Very exciting. And do you want to wish her well? And her
yes.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, Fidelma and Niall, They'll be scullion on Saturday. Yeah, we wish them well and hope they have a great day.
And so do we, and so do we. Right, you're up against John Cagney from Cork. Hello, John.
Hello, good afternoon, Ray. How are you? Hello, Jean.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
John, that is. John, you don't hear of many Cagneys. There's Cagney and Lacey and Mark Cagney and now you, John Cagney.
Well, two of those are related, so take your pick.
Mark Cagney.
Correct.
Is related to you, John Cagney?
Yes.
You're not related to Cagney and Lacey because that's a fictional character.
She was an alcoholic policewoman.
Right.
No relation there.
No relation. Right. So, and what's your relation to Mark?
He's the eldest. He's my oldest, the eldest brother. Oh, he's you're my older brother.
Oh, is he? All right. Yeah. There you go. I've said this to himself, but I was like, when I was a young lad, I used to listen to him when he was on, I think it was a 10 to 12 or midnight to 2 or whatever it was.
The night train.
The night train. That was it. Yes.
Mark after dark.
Okay, yeah. And did you do any DJing yourself or what's your story?
No. We were, our father was a musician and an engineer and I went the engineering route and Mark went the music route.
And are you still doing engineering?
Yeah, that's my job. I work in Dell in Cork.
So engineering, not sound engineering. Engineering.
No. Engineering.
Yes, yeah.
not roadieing.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know there are engineers who aren't roadies, you know. But so I hear that, yeah, because Tom Dunn wrote a piece today on what's the famous U2 engineer from Cork? You'd know his name, wouldn't you?
Joe Hurley.
That's it.
Joe Hurley.
With the beard. Yeah. He's been doing it for U2 for an awful long time. Now, you've an interesting couple of weeks there because you've been to two Valencias.
Yes, we were in the last week, myself and my wife Una, who's sitting next to me, were on holidays for 5 days in Valencia in Spain.
Yeah.
And last Christmas, our two daughters, Grace and Eve, and Grace is in the car with us here as well, they'd given us a voucher for the Kenmare Bay Hotel. And we said we'd combine the two. And we turned it into going from Valencia to Valencia. Yeah. And it was really cool. It was good fun.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? I like that. And did somebody just, was that a light bulb moment that somebody said, oh, we can do the two Valencias?
It was my light bulb moment. I realised like Kenmare, because I've been to Valencia a couple of times when I studied marine radio electronics in college.
Yeah.
And we formed a society to get money off the students' union, and we had to go down to the Valencia radio station and then stayed in Tralee. So I've been there a couple of times, and I said, yeah, I don't think Una and myself had been there. So we said, yeah, we'll combine the two.
Brilliant. Yeah. Because is there a museum down there now? Because of Isn't there?
We drove around part of the island. We went up to the highest mountain on Gwiachán, I think it's called. That was fabulous, the 360 view, although we were blown out of it. And I know there's a Skelligs centre, so I don't know about the... I think there's a radio station museum, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think I saw it recently enough.
They're opening one.
Yeah, they're opening one. Okay, radio.
For where the cable was landed.
That's
between
it.
Canada and here.
Yeah. So it's historic there. Okay, right. John plays Jean. Three questions each. I give you the category and then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If the drawn points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both, Jean and John. Here we go. Now, Jean, French singers. French singers is the first category.
Okay.
What do you want to do? Do you want a clue with that or not?
I know, sure. I'll try my best.
Can you name this French singer for 2 points?
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal. Tout ça m'est bien égal.
Who's that?
Edith Piaf.
It is, yes. Very good.
Thank
Some
you.
Spectacular or rolling there as well. That's from 1960s. Je ne regrette rien. 2 points. Well done. John Cagney.
No clue, please.
No clue on French singers. Okay, name this French singer for 2 points. Who's that?
Johnny Depp's ex, Vanessa Paradis.
It is, yes. No extra points for the extra information. Joe Lataxi from 1987. She was 14 at the time. You get 2 points. Well done, John. Okay, good start from you both. Next category, Gene, film characters. Film characters, as we say in Kildare. Do you want a clue or not?
No, thanks.
No, thanks. Okay, can you name this film character? Not the actor now, the character for 2 points. Here we go.
Hello! Oh, I'm sorry to frighten you, dear. I must look like a yeti in this getup. This is my nightly meringue mask, part of my beauty regimen. What it is basically egg white, creme fraiche, powdered sugar, vanilla, and a little touch of alum. There you go, dear. Oh, there you go. You've got your cream and your sugar now. It's a little cappuccino.
Yeah. Who's that? Character.
The volume was really, really low, but I'll try. Was it Mrs. Doubtfire?
It was, yes. So, yes, you got it. You got the 2 points. Mrs. Doubtfire, played by Robin Williams from 1994. Brilliant. Very funny. Tom happened to be watching that last night. There's a coincidence. But well done. 2 points. John, film characters. What do you want to do?
No.
No clue.
Okay. No clue, please.
Yeah, for 2 points, who is this?
Now then, the qualifications. Item one, a cheery disposition. I am never cross. Item two, rosy cheeks, obviously. Item three, play games all sorts. Well, I'm sure the children will find my games extremely diverting. Item four, you must be kind. I am kind, but extremely firm.
Now, who's that?
Mary Poppins.
It is Mary Poppins, played by Julie Andrews. And believe it or not, next year, that will be 60 years old. Hard to believe. You get 2 points. Okay, so it's very good. Four all. We're down to the wire on this one, and the final category, Irish singers. But they're not singing, they're talking. Irish singers talking. What do you want to do, Jean? Do you want to go with the clue or not?
No, I'll have it. It.
Yeah, it's probably strategically the best thing to do. Yes. So, for 2 points, who is this?
Luke had a great musical voice, which I don't have. As well as having this musical voice, he had great enunciation. Every word, you could get every word. The phrasing was so good that the story came across very clearly. And, you know, depending on the song, very passionately or very funnily or very... He had this great gift. And people have happened to me, I only said that about Luke because you used to sing with him.
Who's that?
Oh, God, I'm not sure.
Quick guess, no. I need some...
No, Luke Kelly, anyway, they were talking about.
No, he was talking about Luke Kelly. It wasn't Luke Kelly. Ronnie Drew.
Yeah, Ronnie Drew.
Yeah,
Ronnie
who was another Dubliner. Both of them were in the Dubliners together.
No,
yeah. You're not out of it yet, because if John doesn't get anything from this final question of his, we're into a tie-break situation. If he gets anything out of it, John, if you get anything out of it, you're today's winner. So on Irish singers talking, what do you want to do, John Cagney?
I'll take a clue, please.
You will, okay. His daughter won Miss World. For 1 point, who is this?
Yeah, Christa Berg.
We had a great laugh because we've been...
It's Christa Berg, yes, there you go. 1 point, you got it, 5. Jean, sorry about that, you did so well. Like four...
Thank you.
I think four would have won every other quiz this week. But unfortunately, you're up against a good one in John Cagney. But we're going to send you out...
Good luck, Jean.
We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show. Yep, there you go. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. And enjoy the wedding on Saturday.
I will. Thanks very much.
Yeah, lovely talking to you, Jean. Bye now. Yeah. Bye.
Thank you.
Well done, John.
Thank you very much, Ray.
You're off again. Huh? They're at home going, he doesn't deserve that now. He's just been to Valencia and the other Valencia. Now he's going to Ariel House. Arielhouse.ie. It's a lovely venue. 2 nights there and you get breakfast. They're award-winning breakfast each morning, and you can look it up, Arielhouse.ie. Lovely talking to you, John. If you're talking to your brother, tell him we said hello.
I will indeed. Thank
okay.
you very much, Ray.
See
goodbye.
You, John. Safe home. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, I apologise in advance for what you might hear in the next 10 minutes or so. You heard me say to Bill Bailey earlier that I've kind of set myself a challenge. I'm creeping inexorably towards a big birthday, a roundy one, and I think I'm ready to try something new. This is not a midlife crisis, because that's long in the rearview mirror there, but it's something I've always wanted to do, and I've the excuse of a young lad at home to justify getting a drum kit. Yes, a drum kit. It's an electronic one, as you heard me say to Bill, so there are headphones. I'm not disturbing anybody else in the family or the neighbours. And when I thought about learning the drums, there's one man that came straight into my head, fellow Kildare man, Mr. Graeme Hopkins, who, as I said earlier on, is one of the best drummers in Ireland. Graeme, hello.
Hello, Ray.
I never thought I'd be talking to you in this, you know, under these circumstances, but it's good to talk to you. So, fellow Kildare, is it Leixlip, Selbridge, whereabouts?
Clane.
There you go. Neither of the above. Now, I knew your dad before I knew you.
Yes.
Yeah. Dez.
Dez. And then I knew you. Do you remember Joe Maxey?
Yes.
Of course you do. And yeah. Then I was on Joe Maxey when I was about 12.
Were you?
Do you remember there was an A&R kind of guy? And I came in along with my best friend and a few other guys, and we asked the A&R guy some questions. Do you remember that at all?
How do you get into the music industry?
Yeah, how do you get, what do I do? And there was a friend of mine who was in various bands, Niall Power. Niall to ask what, you know, question maybe should I ask? And I can't even remember. But
Niall,
I think,
Power is a distant relation of mine.
Is he?
Yeah, he was from the Curra.
Indeed.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So he was
great guy.
He was a second cousin of my dad's or something.
A second cousin of your dad's.
Was he a drummer as well?
Indeed.
He was,
with,
yes,
Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
Along with great, and a great inspiration to me, you know.
Yeah. And you're from a long line of drummers.
Indeed. My grandfather as well, a drummer, and then my dad, a drummer, still
right.
Kicking.
So my dad was a drummer.
Right.
Yeah, and my son now is learning to play the drums. So I thought, just to keep the continuity going.
Well, you have to.
When did you start it?
I started, I can't remember the first. My father says that my first time, he was cleaning his drums in our dining room. And right. I was out of the kind of, what do you call them? The little things.
Oh, yeah,
the
suspended things. Yeah, I can't remember.
And
the name,
I was
yeah.
kind of hitting them.
Oh, yes.
While he was cleaning them. Yeah. And then I always just hit them, and then I used to sit at the side of his stage with, you know, drumsticks,
yeah.
and hit the side of the stage. I remember doing that, and just progressively just started drumming, and then
yeah.
I just used to bring drums into school. I had a fantastic teacher called Mr. Billy Dunphy. He used to let me bring drums into my school every Friday, and just got more and more, and I actually left school when I was 17, just months before my Leaving Cert, to join this band called My Little Funhouse, who were signed to Geffen Records, and from there it just.
You've never stopped drumming.
Never stopped, and I had no plans to.
Yeah, and your therapy. You're in.
Yes,
you're in therapy. The band, as opposed
yeah.
to. I don't know if
yes.
you're in therapy yourself. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And you've drummed for all. Give us a list. Go on.
All right. Where do I go? Where do I start? Where do
the
I
big names?
All right. The big names. Well,
most currently, you've drummed on Glenn Hansard's most recent album.
Yes, yeah. I have, and then toured with Glenn the Swell Season after the film Once, which I played songs on, and. That was a fantastic tour, touring the globe several times over for the guts of 10 years.
Right.
As well as that, around all of that time before that, after I left therapy, recording albums and touring with the likes of Gemma Hayes and, you know, David Kitt.
And then internationally, you would have, you're sort of a gun for hire.
Well, I toured and recorded Dolores O'Riordan's only solo album.
Tom Jones, I saw listed.
Yes, yeah, we did a fantastic album with Tom and Rosanna Cash.
Right.
Who else?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, I've lost.
Yeah, too many
touch.
To remember. Now, and now you're working with me. God, how things, things have changed for you.
How's this going to go?
Exactly, how is this going to go? So you brought in a basic drum kit, right? Has that got a story, that drum kit?
Oh my God, it's got a story. I got, when I was in the band Therapy with the question mark,
yeah.
I played all sorts of kits growing up, and I wanted this old school, original kind of Ludwig kit. And our tour manager at the time went out and bought me this kit, and he brought it back into a sound check one day, and I was completely blown away. And I found out after a time, I got this phone call one day in a hotel that we were staying in London on my mobile. And I think this was the first mobile I ever had. And he told me, his name was Bob Henrett, and he was one of the drummers that played in the Kinks.
Right.
And he used to own it. Wow. And I was blown away. Thought he was taking the mick, you know.
You really got me there.
Yes.
Hey. Hey.
And he came down to soundcheck, tried to buy the kit back off me. But sorry.
No.
I wasn't going to have it. But I still, I put it into retirement. I only use it for...
special occasions.
Yes. Studio sessions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I feel honoured. I feel honoured. And what's so special about it, apart from the story...
It's like a 1955 WFL means WF... William F. Ludwig.
Yeah.
Such an old 1955 Ludwig precious drum kit.
Right.
And it's just so special.
See, all of this talk about special drums and you touring with all these people.
And we're not
playing yet. Yeah, I know. And it makes me feel a little bit, scared. So drumming, a lot of dexterity involved because hands are doing something, both feet are doing something, but there are basics, aren't there?
Which you kind of roughly had a go at earlier on before the show. And I think you've got it because you already said about your generations. And, you can start easily enough and all it takes is concentration, practice, even listening to songs in headphones.
Yeah.
One, two, three, four.
So I can do this one, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not very difficult.
Yeah.
I've been playing along with a bit of this at home.
Doesn't get much easier.
Yeah, because that's... Yeah, you play that now, that drum beat.
Okay.
I can do that. Yeah. Okay. So that's a basic rock beat.
Oh, you can't get easier. It's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
One,
so
yeah.
I better get over. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to turn it.
Come on over. I'll keep playing it while you're... Right, I'm going to move.
I'm getting in behind the drum kit now. Yeah. Graham is going to get up to a microphone there. Okay, now, the drums that I have at home, Graham, are electronic drums. So I haven't, apart from a little bit before we started the show today, I haven't sat in front of a real drum kit since my dad. One of my first memories at home is my dad setting up the drum kit in a very small room and him playing with his brushes.
Yes.
Because he loved jazz.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, and he showed me a little bit like to hold, see that...
Yeah, that's great. I call that the orthodox grip. And my father plays like that
Does
as well.
Yes, yeah.
That's the original grip that came, understandably, from marching drummers because they're, snare.
Okay,
is...
I'm going to do a bit because we've about 40 seconds here and you're going to say if I have a future as a drummer. Here
okay.
we go.
I honestly think with more practice is perfect and you've got it.
Have I?
Yeah, you just do it. And if you,
do you teach?
Click, I did for BIM is the college in Dublin. I did about a year and a half in between touring in there. And if you stick with me, I'll show you even more. You've got it, Ray Darcy. Just keep practicing. It makes perfect. You know?
I'm excited because I think I have the basics. I think I have the basics, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Fiona's been on to us. I'm going to read that tomorrow because she started drumming at the age of 59 as well. So we have something in common. Graham Hopkins, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, she says, last March, days before my 59th birthday, I started drumming lessons with a wonderful teacher called Danny. It's the best thing I've ever done. Today, I played along to Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, by Green Day. It's challenging but great fun. I would highly recommend it. So we might get Fiona on tomorrow to talk to her and see if she get on. Graham, I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming in and bringing the drum kit in. That's it from us.
Check out my Instagram. It's Graham_Hopkins and... it's the place to be.
Great. Thanks, Graham. Cormac and Sarah on the way in Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.